Pele leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change Freddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure.
New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Oh yeah, baby. Can't get better than a victory. Monday, the Packers topped the Philadelphia Eagles at Lambeau Field on Sunday, 30-16. I'm Alex Strofe, at Alex underscore Strofe on Twitter, with you to break it all down on this wonderful Victory Monday alongside my great friend Andy Herman at Andy Herman NFL on the Bird app. What's up, Andy? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Alex. Happy birthday. It is
Thank
the
you.
Monday edition of the podcast. It is officially your birthday. So, you know, one, how old are you? And two, is there any way, you know, better to celebrate than a Victory Monday?
To answer your second question first, no, there is not. If we would have lost, it would have been a birthday spent in bed, probably very sad, because that would have been a horrible loss. And secondly, I'm 22. I'm at the ripe age of 22 now as of today.
That's crazy. I can't believe we're the exact same age. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Andy, you look really good for 22, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you got married at a young age, though. Anyway.
I did.
Let's dive into this 30-16 win for the Packers, which brings them to a nice record of 9-3 on the year, standalone in second place of the NFC. Now, when we right before we started recording, you said it was a pretty good game all the way through, except there was a couple dumb moments. Bring me into your thoughts on yesterday's game.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, let's start with the good. There's a lot of good from the. You know, looked like itself for a good majority of the game, put up another 30 spot against a team that I think quietly has a really nice defense. And, you know, I think we can talk about the Colts, you know, the fact that they put up 28 in the first half and then maybe weren't the same after that. Maybe you can talk about the Bears, you know, not having Akeem Hicks, but overall they put up points in that game as well. And then the Eagles, you know, there's no really extenuating circumstances here. This is a good Eagles defense. I know their offense isn't the greatest, but, I thought Green Bay did a really nice job throwing another 30 spot up on offense, some three and outs, which we'll get to later. But the offense kind of controlled things, even the defense, you know, seven sacks on the day for the defense. You know, the first half, they limited them to 3 points. And it's really just the one bad play on defense that, you know, what, fourth that touchdown. And then, you know, the special teams, unfortunately, was kind of the one that really brought things, you know, down and really was in a way abysmal. And I think you've got, obviously, the punt return for a touchdown. You've got the missed extra point. You had the holding penalty on a punt return. J.K. Scott struggled again. It's really tough to take away anything positive from the special teams in this game. They did actually, Alex, I don't know if you saw this, they did have a kick return that went past the 30 in this game.
Did.
They did have a kick return that went past the 30. So I guess kudos for that. But overall, really solid game, impressive performance. They get a win at home. They continue, you know, with a 9-3 record. My one thing is that, you know, this is, it's kind of like Mortal Kombat, right? Like, you know, Green Bay has them staggered, you know, has team staggered like over and over and over throughout the season. And, you know, finish them is just flashing across the screen. And you just want to see the Packers have that like finishing move that, you know, that death blow, if you will, that's just going to kind of ultimately end it. And instead it's like, all right, you know, 4th and 18, they get off the field on that 4th and 18 against a rookie quarterback and the game's over. Like, it's not even in question. It's not in flux. Like, nothing's going on. And instead, and not only that, not even if you give up the 4th and 18, you're still in a really good spot. You know, yes, they get a first down, but make them earn the touchdown. But instead, you give up a touchdown on 4th and 18, and it's just like, you know, everything's back in the game. Then a 3-and-out, then a punt return for a touchdown, then another 3-and-out. Like, it's just like you have these moments in each game where something just goes wrong, and you just want to get rid of those things. Because if you just take away really two plays in this entire game, it is a dominant performance. Yeah. So I think that those are the things that just kind of stick with you a little bit.
No, you're spot on. And a couple times throughout this season, it seems garbage time or really fourth quarter has not gone super well for the Packers. It seems like everything just goes away at that point. And, You know, the Eagles were within a score, which was not how this game felt at all, you know, the 50 minutes prior. So a little frustrating, but they had Aaron Jones to figure that one out for them on a 77-yarder there at the end of the game, and we'll get to that. But otherwise, yes, pretty dominant game for the Packers. Like what we saw for the most part outside of, again, that fourth quarter was a little frustrating in some capacities. But milestones all over the place on Sunday, Andy. Aaron Rodgers threw his 400th touchdown pass. That was to Devontae Adams. Now, I know everybody in the world predicted who it would be to. Did you pick Devontae?
I think I picked MVS, although I never really had any sort of, you know, horse in the race or any real gut. Obviously, easy money is going to be on Devontae because, you know, he basically catches, you know, at least a touchdown a game right now.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know, and he's just playing out of his damn mind. So I think easy money was on Adams. I think I did, you know, at some point in the week, I forget whether it was on a radio show or whatever the heck I was, you know, doing at the time. I think somebody did ask me and I think I said MVS. But again, smart money certainly would have been on Adams.
No doubt about it. And that's where it went to. So Devontae Adams, the receiver that caught both Rodgers' 200th career touchdown pass and his 400th career touchdown pass, which it's kind of crazy to think that's how long Devontae has been catching touchdowns from Aaron Rodgers, because that is a lot of touchdowns in between. But nonetheless, Rodgers also the first quarterback in NFL history with 35-plus touchdown passes in five different seasons. He's just that darn special. Devontae also very special, though. Andy, he eclipsed the 1,000 yards mark, receiving yards mark, on Sunday against Philadelphia, and he joined Randy Moss, Terrell Owens, Marvin Harrison, and Jerry Rice as the only wide receivers in the Super Bowl era to hit 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns in their first 10 games of a season. Now, that company he's in, Randy Moss, Hall of Famer, Terrell Owens, Hall of Famer, Marvin Harrison, Hall of Famer, Jerry Rice, you know what he is, Andy?
Yeah, also a Hall of Famer, just barely made that Mendoza line for wide receivers.
Yes, but regardless, I mean, that's pretty special company, and what he's been able to do this season, ridiculous, bananas every game. You mentioned he's catching a touchdown in every game. He had two and over 100 yards on Sunday. This connection, and we'll get to our plays of the game, I'm sure this one will be brought up, but the connection between 12 and 17 was on full display again on Sunday. It's so darn special.
Yeah, it really is. And I think, you know, just kind of going over these milestones one by one. First of all, the Rodgers 400th touchdown pass, you know, he was the first to admit it wasn't like he did a ton on the play. It was just kind of a quick little, you know, pass over to Devontae Adams, and Devontae kind of did the rest of the work along with the blocking along the sideline. But I think the kind of cool aspect of that play was just how his teammates celebrated him. You know, Devontae Adams down on two knees, you know, kind of handing him the football, well aware that it was number 400, unlike James Jones, who apparently took number 100 it was 100, and threw it into the stands, which is amazing. You know, so I think that, and then, you know, it was Alan Lazard who kind of came in and, you know, put like pretended to put a crown on Aaron Rodgers, and just, you know, seeing the joy that the teammates had with Aaron Rodgers, I thought was really amazing. And then, you know, the 35 plus touchdowns in five seasons. First of all, I'm shocked that no quarterback has done this. And to be fair, Tom Brady could be another one who does it this year if he gets to 35 touchdowns this season. But just crazy again, and to have five different seasons with 35 plus touchdowns just shows again how dominant he's been in so many different seasons. And really, you know, as he gave credit to as well, you know, all the really good players that he's played with over his time certainly contribute to that also. You know, Tay 1,000 yards on the season. It was really funny because what he said, two seasons where he finished with 997, and right before he went over 1,000, he was stuck on 998. And I'm just like, I just wanted to see him catch like a 3-yard pass before, like, I almost wanted to go out and put him in bubble wrap to make sure like he didn't get hurt for the year or something, and that he got to 1,000 yards. It was just like, it was like destined to be this jinx, but he got over it, got 1,000 yards, and then, you know, just to be in the same you know, sentence as, you know, Randy Moss, Terrell Owens, Marvin Harrison, and Jerry Rice, you know, four of the all-time greats at that wide receiver position. And what, arguably, you know, four of the top five, probably, I mean, at least right there. So, you know, Adams has been, nothing short of incredible. And I kind of tweeted out during the game, he gets rightfully all the credit in the world for being kind of the best receiver at the line of scrimmage with his releases and his route running. Mm-hmm. He's so ridiculously good. But I don't think he gets the credit for the contested catchability that he has. And I thought he showed that on multiple occasions. The play that he caught down at the 1 yard line, I have no idea how he caught that ball. And then the very next play where he catches the first touchdown pass, again, that's an amazing contested catch situation. Mm-hmm. And then the play where, you know, Rodgers threw it at basically like the negative 9 yard line, backed up in his own end zone. Tay goes up and makes that ridiculous contested catch. Like, he's just at a totally different level right now. Yeah. And he's just so fun to watch.
And how poetic was it? It was shortly after that MVS drop where, you know, he had another deep ball thrown to him. And he pretty much says, yeah, this is how you bring in the deep ball. It was perfectly placed and perfectly executed by Devontae, who, again, just a ridiculous day again on Sunday. His line, 10 catches for 121 yards and 2 touchdowns. Rodgers, not, yeah, right there. Also just terrific. 25 of 34, 295 throwing and 3 touchdowns on the day for A-Rod. So both those guys just hitting at ridiculous levels, peaking at the right time as we near the end of the season, and just so darn fun to watch. I tweeted, and maybe this might have been a heat of the moment thing, but maybe it's true. I said they're the best duo in the National Football League.
I think that's totally fair. And I just think they're on a totally different level right now, just even with each other, knowing what each other are going to be doing on a given play. They hit a gorgeous back shoulder at one point in this game. Yeah. That one completion on the rollout where he just kind of sidearmed it off his back foot and Tay's just wide open on a crosser, you know, the intermediate part of the field. Like, they just know, it seems like they know exactly what each other are thinking, very similar to Rodgers and Jordy, when both of those two players were really in their prime as well. And I mean, the transformation for Rodgers over into the season, over the past 3 years, he's been really good, but not near that, you know, kind of MVP level. And just to see him get back to that level and play with such confidence and such anticipation, playing within the pocket, making the big plays when he needs to, I could not be more impressed with the season that Aaron Rodgers has put together. Both of these guys are playing at all pro levels, and it just makes this offense so damn dangerous.
Yeah, and they were up against Darius Slay today, and you mentioned on Twitter, you pointed out the matchups he's had, and I followed up with the matchups he has coming up, assuming he is healthy. I know he exited the game on Sunday, but he had DK Metcalf last week, Devontae Adams this week, and still this season he's got, what are the names? DeAndre Hopkins, Terry McLaurin, Michael Thomas, and Amari Cooper with a healthy Andy Dalton, we assume. So definitely not a fun way to end the year for Darius Slay in Philly.
2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Term and conditions apply.
No, not at all. And he might want that knee injury maybe to linger a couple of weeks. Not really. I know he wants to get out there and compete. He's a hell of a football player, but that is a tough stretch. And even just DK and Devontae back to back is difficult enough in and of itself, especially just because they're two totally different receivers as well. Can't even imagine of having to get to, get everything together to try to go back to back against those two players.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about the running game for Green Bay on Sunday, Andy. Cold to start, for sure, I think is the best way to put it. Aaron Jones had only, what's the quick math here, 53 yards, I think, outside of his 77-yard run there at the end of the game. So nothing off the walls for him outside of that run. What was your big takeaway from the running game? Was that an issue, or was it not as big of a deal?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting scenario, right? Because if I'm Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers is, you know, throwing everything perfectly and Devontae Adams can't be guarded, like, it's got to be really ridiculously hard to call run plays in that situation. At the same token, you would like to see the run game have a little bit more success early in the game. You know, Jamal had 5 carries, 26 yards, a little bit over 5 yards per carry. Mm-hmm. You know, before that 77 yarder, it would have been 14 for 53 for Jones, which isn't, you know, terrible by any stretch, just a hair under 4 yards per carry. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not like this was a bad game. And then obviously when you tack on the 77 yarder at the end, that's a huge play and really a huge moment when the game was still in question at that point. But I think, you know, with the situation when they were having so much success passing the ball, you know, and Devontae's playing the way that he is, I think it's just really tough to kind of stick with the running game. And you would probably be upset with Matt LaFleur if everything was, you know, running on all cylinders in the passing game and he kept trying to feed the ball to the running back. So I think he did the right thing and kind of stuck with the hot hand in this game.
Yeah, that's actually really well said. That's the term I was going to use, stuck with the hot hand. And that's the smart move in today's game. I agree with you. Jamal did break off a nice 18-yard run, was his long. We mentioned Aaron Jones' 77-yarder, not quite as long as his buddy AJ's, but pretty close, 18 yards the long for Jamal Williams, who, again, averaged over 5 yards a carry. And Aaron Jones finished with an 8-yard average if you count that big long run. So that's actually pretty darn good. That's above average for that offense. The last thing I want to hit on with this offense, Andy, is 30 points, which is kind of that threshold we've kind of made the mantra of this season, if you will, right? The Packers have scored 30 points in almost, you know, all of their games, it seems. And when they do that, they typically win. And while they hit that 30-point threshold right on the dot, they had 4 3-and-outs, which is not really acceptable. That's not good, right?
Yeah, I thought this was a really interesting day for the offense. I mean, those 4 3-and-outs is a big negative. Of course, they didn't have any turnovers on offense, which is great. You know, Adams and Rodgers and everyone was kind of, again, hitting on all cylinders for the majority of the day. But at the same token, you want to see the offense have a little bit more consistency. And some of those 3-and-outs in the second half came at very inopportune times. So I think the thing here is that Green Bay's offense really beat themselves when they, you know, when they weren't, you know, when they weren't able to get drives going. And I think you look at it early in the game, you had that toss to Aaron Jones that it did really to start the game, that what goes for negative 6 yards. And then Lucas Patrick allows a sack on one of the other drives that it stalls. You know, MVS had the drop down the field. Like, more often than not, if you go back and watch, this was not the Eagles defense stopping the Packers. This was the Packers offense stopping the Packers. So I mean, that's ultimately a good thing that they were, you know, so far ahead of the game that it was them that had to kind of trip over their own shoelaces in order to stop themselves. But you just need to clean up a couple of those things. And again, nobody's expecting perfection. Nobody's expecting them to score on every drive or anything like that. But I just thought it was noteworthy that usually when the Packers were stalled, it was almost because of their own mistakes, not because of something Philly did.
No, that's well said. Yeah. And, you know, this team hasn't been punting a ton this year. I mean, they had several games where, in fact, I don't think they did at all more than once, you know, used J.K. Scott and four 3-and-outs. You know, it's a lot more than we're used to with Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he typically leads a pretty efficient offense, and especially under Matt LaFleur, it's been efficient against a sneaky good Eagles defense, or sneaky competent Eagles defense, whichever one you prefer, who stepped up today and was definitely up to the task. But nonetheless, Aaron Rodgers putting up a 30 burger against Philly. Onto the defense. Well, I guess the good note was only 10 of those points were allowed by the defense that the Eagles scored. And the other huge note, which a number that kind of jumps off the page, 7 sacks for the Packers defense against that horrible, horrible Philly offensive line.
Yeah, again, I think this was a really interesting game for the defense as well. You look at it as a whole, and really when, you know, for the most part, when the game was in, you know, in question, this Packers defense was really good. And again, if it's just not for that one play, you look at this defense as having probably their most complete game of the season. It still probably was under 300 yards of total offense for the Eagles. You know, Carson Wentz was 6 of 15 for 79 yards, took 4 sacks on the day. Miles Sanders, who was, I believe, second in the league in yards per carry on the season, 10 carries, 31 yards. You know, they kept the receivers pretty in check. Alshon Jeffrey, no catches. Travis Fulgham, no catches. Jalen Reagor, 1 catch, 34 yards. He was the one who had the touchdown catch on that one play, if I remember correctly. But You know, overall, I thought the defense did a nice job. I thought the coverage was better. You know, to be fair, again, bad offensive line, bad quarterback who got benched in the game, you know, in an offense that is really playing abysmal football right now. But it's still, you have to go out, you have to play the games, and you have to take care of business. And again, outside of the one play, they allowed 10 points, and including that one play. The six others were on the punt return for the touchdown. So I really think the defense did its job. When you go out and you allow 10 points on defense, have seven sacks and interception, you're going to win almost every single one of those games. So this is still a winning performance from the defense, but I go back to earlier, just in some of those situations and scenarios, you know, you really want to see them just kind of finish the game and just make that one more play. If you go back to a couple weeks ago on against the Bears, fourth and 11, I want to say, Chandon Sullivan has the ability to, you know, really kind of end the game right there when they were still up, 41-10 at the time. He has outside leverage on the play on Anthony Miller, allows Anthony Miller to get inside of him, and they complete the pass. They go down, score a touchdown, then they get another touchdown on a play because Kevin King dropped an interception that was thrown right to him. And then this game, again, you've got fourth and 16, fourth and 18, whatever it was, against a rookie quarterback. You know, just get off the field. And again, this is probably a game where you allow, you know, potentially only 3 points in that game. And it just, again, looks so much better. And we're not grading on a curve here. We're not grading on style points, but just a couple more plays here and there, and it just looks so much more dominant from the defense.
Yeah, you mentioned that 4th and 18 play against the rookie quarterback. Jalen Hurts, who came into this game in relief of Carson Wentz, came in and you know, that's a 4th down late game, a little bit too close for comfort. That obviously made it a little bit closer on that touchdown. But 4th and 18, you just want to get off the field, and they can't. They eventually score, I think it was a 32-yarder for Greg Ward from Jalen Hurts. Unacceptable. What did you see on that play? Was there a breakdown? Did I miss something? Because I know you're looking at the X's and O's a lot more in depth than I am. What happened there? Why were they not able to get off the field and allow that 30-plus yard touchdown?
Yeah, that's one I'll be taking a look at, the all 22 when it comes out. I'll be transparent, I haven't had a chance to look at it in too great a detail yet. But you know, you just don't want to see anyone running that wide open in that sort of situation and scenario. You want to see the safety staying deeper than the deep, and obviously you want to see the corner a little bit closer. Again, I haven't seen it close enough to see exactly what happened, but either way, you want to see the defense be a little bit more stout in that situation.
100%. But nonetheless, they escape with a W, so we shouldn't be so pessimistic. Let's move to this note, because I think this is interesting. So Za'Darius Smith, who had a sack and a half, Kenny Clark, and Preston Smith went to Coach Pettine and asked to be more aggressive, especially at the end of games, which we know, as we mentioned a couple minutes back, that hasn't been the case this season, it seems. What's that about? Bring me up to speed on that. And, you know, did you see anything specifically different this week? I know they were a little bit more successful on the defensive side of the ball. We saw them collapsing the pocket. I mean, seven sacks is super impressive. So clearly something changed and something was working that hasn't been previously.
Yeah, I think here's the thing that I like about it overall. I think, first of all, it shows you that the defense wasn't super satisfied with the points that they allowed. And really what was – it's two different scenarios this week and last week. Last week was legitimate garbage time. The Bears were not coming back in that game. No. This game, you know, when they allowed that touchdown, that's still a two-possession game, you know, and certainly within the realm of reason with about, what, like 10 minutes or so, you know, left in the game. So, yes, a little bit more towards garbage time this week, but nowhere near what it was a week ago. So, you know, you love to see that they cared about those points that they gave up and that they wanted to stay aggressive and that they don't just want to allow the yards up and down the field. So you love that the players cared. Then, two, you love that they, you know, they go to Coach Pettine, that he listens to them and that, you know, kind of hear things out. And, you know, what I think it really does is by kind of listening to them and saying, you know, well, we will be more aggressive, it then gains some ownership from those players and Preston, Za'Darius, and Kenny, because then they have a say and say, you know what, we went to coach and we said we want to be a little bit more aggressive so that we can hunt and get to the quarterback and make those plays like we did a season ago. And if that's the case, then you got to go out, because the coach is listening to you. He's going to say, all right, go be more aggressive as a player. Now the coach is listening to me. Now I got to back up what I asked for and make sure that I'm getting to the quarterback because he's listening to me. And now I'm kind of on the limb because I really want this to work. And now that they've gone out of their way to listen to me. So I think it just, you know, really builds buy-in and ownership from those players. And again, I think this is exactly what you want to see from the leaders on your defense, that they're having these conversations, because you know what? It means that these players care enough that they're talking about it with each other, that all of these guys are going up and saying, you know what, we got to talk to coach. We want to be more aggressive. And then you love seeing the coaching staff listen to them and kind of play it out on the field. And I did think they were a little bit more aggressive. I thought they were a little bit more aggressive last week. I think they were aggressive still this week. But I think you just didn't see, you know, some of the off coverages. Unfortunately, maybe the 4th and 18 doesn't happen again. I want to take a look at a little bit more to see exactly what happened there. But overall, I like the concept. And I do think that this has got to be a defense that finds that way to finish teams off, be more aggressive at the end of games. We've seen the offense be ultra aggressive going for it on 4th downs, you know, all gas, no break. And I think it is time for the defense to follow that mentality as well. And I'm happy to hear that conversation took place.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I really do, because you look at, you know, three of the best guys, really the top guys and you know, most respected guys after the seasons they all had last year, and Z, Clark, and Preston doing that. That's not a doomsday moment by any means. That's not a we don't believe in Petten moment. This is a moment of self-reflection and maybe a fire lit under the ass a little bit, saying what we've been producing hasn't been enough. And they're reflecting on that, and they want to change it, because they've got one goal this season, Andy, as every other team besides maybe the Jets has, and that would be they want to hoist the Lombardi. And they know maybe what they were putting out on the field wasn't good enough throughout the course of this season. So that was good to see. But other than those guys stepping up in the locker room, we had a couple second-year guys, in fact, step up on the field on the defensive side of the ball. Kingsley Keke, how about him having a 2-sack day? And Rashawn Gary, the former first-round pick, with a sack and a half for himself. What'd you see out of those guys? It was great to see them in the mix in the offensive backfield.
Yeah, first of all, you can really see Rashawn Gary coming along and really starting to amp up the pressure, play more physical, get under players' pads. I really like the way that he's playing right now. And, you know, kind of Darnell Savage and Rashawn Gary in the same kind of vein, both of these players were players that over the course of the last month, you could really see kind of coming on and starting to play really good football. You didn't always necessarily see the results, but you saw you kind of trusted the process that they were going through. And over the course of the last couple of weeks, Savage gets paid off for it with 3 interceptions over 2 weeks. And now Gary's starting to pile up some sacks as well. So, really like what I saw out of him. And then, you know, going over Kingsley Keke as well, it's funny. During the game, I tweeted out, I said, on one of the sacks, I said, Keke looks like prime Mike Daniels on that rush. Fell down momentarily, but nice play from Kingsley. And literally while we've been recording here, Mike Daniels liked the tweet and said, I agreed. I really like his play. So Mike Daniels in and of himself agreed that Kingsley Keke was looking a little bit like the former defensive tackle here in Green Bay. So really liked what I've seen out of him. The big thing is, I've seen these flashes already this season from Kingsley Keke. Just want to see a bit more consistency. And of course, you can say that about almost everyone, especially players in their second year. But the fact that he's showing some of those flash plays as a second year, fifth round pick, really, this is his first year with any significant playing time. I just think, you know, we're all caught in the here and now. We all want everyone to be really good right now. But these things take time. And I think Kingsley Keke's on a really nice trajectory right alongside Darnell Savage, Elton Jenkins, Rashawn Gary in that draft class a season ago is looking really good and really impressive. For the most part, I think a couple players, you know, Jay Sternberger, Ty Summers, Dexter Williams, you know, a couple of those guys might not be on that same exact trajectory, but you really like seeing it from some of these younger players who are really stepping up in year two.
Yeah, and I know you kind of expected at least some sort of impact from Kingsley Keke in the preseason. I think you wrote a piece or two surrounding maybe his uprise this year. But I want to ask how impressed you've been with Rashawn Gary. It seems like he has played just tremendously well this year, you know, such progression from his rookie season. What's the big takeaway from Gary for you this year?
Yeah, I think the big thing is he's learning to play his game a little bit more. So, you know, early in his career, you saw him want to be a little bit more of a speed rusher. You wanted to see him kind of win around the edge, and that's not really his game. And he could do that at Michigan because he was just such a freak, and offensive tackles weren't as quick out of their stance in college, and, you know, he has the ability just to kind of go by those players. In the NFL, you can't go by him. And what he's really learned to do is really convert that speed into power, use bull rushes, get under players' pads, and really affect the pocket and get, you know, really push offensive linemen back into the pocket and then disengage and then go and make a play, which is what we saw out of one of his sacks this week. So I think you're starting to see him play a little bit more to his strengths. I think the big thing for Gary is now going to be figuring out counters to that, because teams are going to be now sitting back a little bit more on him and expecting more of a bull rush, expecting him to convert speed into power. And now he's going to have to figure out counters. So it's just it's like this puzzle that kind of keeps, you know, playing off of itself. It's like playing chess where you have one move, but it's really used to set up another move. And I've seen him use a hump move at times, which he tried today. It wasn't successful with it, but you like seeing him throw some variety in there. It's just going to be now figuring out, all right, I've got a go-to move now, which he didn't have last year. Now he's got that go-to move. Now how can you build, he's got the foundation. Now what can you build on top of it? And that's what I'm really excited to see, because again, the traits are there, the hard work is there. He's now got a go-to move, and now hopefully it can all build on top of each other.
100%. I've really liked what I've seen out of him this year. I'll tell you what, Andy, you know, watching the Packers defense, I wouldn't have guessed that the Packers were the team that put their starting center on IR yesterday, watching the way they handled the Eagles offensive line.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline online today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Right. No, I agree with you. And I think, you know, that just is a testament, one, to the Packers' depth on their offensive line. And then two, to really what the Packers were able to do up front. To be fair, the Eagles are pretty banged up along their offensive line as well. Andre Dillard, Brandon Brooks, to say the least. And I know Lane Johnson, I mean, just some really damn good offensive linemen for the Eagles were out in this game. So they're definitely beat up there as well. But Green Bay, again, did their work up front. You don't apologize for who you win against in a game.
No, that's 100% true. But I mean, a lot of credit to Elton Jenkins. Once again, I know I'm kind of an Elton Jenkins stan at this point, as we might all be, given what he's been able to do in his first two seasons as a Packer. The versatility, we've mentioned he's played a snap at every position. He started at quite a few. You know, he switched over to center with Lindsley getting put on IR on Saturday. So that guy is just so darn good at football.
And what were your thoughts about, you know, starting Rick Wagner in this game? Because I know it caught a lot of people by surprise. Were you surprised that Wagner got the nod?
I was surprised. I thought we were going to get the Runyon tryout and see what we had against his dad's former team. Obviously, kind of a cool storyline with all of that. I was surprised, and right out of the gates, he got pushed to the grass. But I didn't hear his name a whole lot after that. So I guess that might be a good thing. But it definitely didn't start great for him.
No, I thought Rick Wagner overall, it seemed like, had a nice game. Again, that'll be somebody I'm watching closely this week. But I think the move here was the right one. And I can see in an in-game situation where if somebody goes down like last week when Corey goes down, if you want to bring Rick Wagner in, that means you got to move Elton from left guard to center. That means you've got to move Lucas Patrick from right guard to left guard. That means you've got to move Billy Turner from right tackle to right guard. And then that means you bring Rick Wagner in. So there's four new pieces in each of the spots alongside David Bakhtiari. So in game, I think you can make an argument that it makes a lot more sense just to, you know, move Jenkins from center or left guard to center and bring in John Runyon. So you're really at least the right side of the line can you know, kind of continue a status quo. I think when you have a week to prepare for a team, I think it does make, you know, a little bit more sense to maybe get your veteran out there, especially when you've got guys like Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Derek Barnett. This is a very veteran and talented defensive line, along with Malik Jackson and Javon Hargrave. Like, this is a very good defensive group. And of anything on this Eagles team, If there's one group that had the ability to, you know, maybe win a game for you, it's their defensive line. 100%. So I think, you know, bringing in the veterans and letting them just kind of do the work and maybe not allow a fluke play by a rookie left guard who was taken in the sixth round, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of us, myself included, would have liked to seen some John Runyon just to see, you know, kind of what he's capable of doing in a full game. But I think they made the right move here by going with Rick Wagner.
But the thing is, Andy, I don't have a huge preference. And that's back to my earlier point about, you know, the Philadelphia offensive line, which was really bad on Sunday, but obviously beat up, as you mentioned. I don't feel worried. And the starting center just got put on injured reserve, so he's out at least 3 weeks. And to know the versatility and the depth of Green Bay's offensive line is really comforting almost as a Packer fan.
100% agreed. I couldn't agree with you more. And the fact that, again, not only do they have the depth that has now already survived, but, you know, Lane Taylor injury and now Corey Linsley injury, who's on IR for at least 3 weeks, including this game, you know, they've still got a good starting lineup and they still got John Runyon on the bench who they trust. So I think that just gives a testament. They really went into this season with 8 starting offensive linemen, whether they knew it or not. And even with some injuries, they've got some depth there.
No doubt about it. All right, let's switch to a an Eagles podcast quick. It's too bad we don't have Ben Fennell with us. look, we buried the lead until right now. Jalen Hurts, rookie quarterback, came in for Carson Wentz. It's been talked about, rumored for a few weeks. It was just a matter of when Doug Peterson would pull the plug on Wentz and let everybody see what Jalen Hurts has. And to be frank, he looked okay. He, you know, he's got a great arm, really great in placement. Didn't get to see a ton from him, but I thought what we did see was solid out of Jalen Hurts. What'd you see out of the Eagles QBs?
Yeah, I think they're just in such a tough scenario because we talked about that Eagles offensive line being so beat up. Do you really want to put in your rookie quarterback who's maybe not right. quite ready yet against an offensive line who can barely protect and has given up 3 sacks, what they say, in like 10 straight weeks? I think it was they given up 3+ sacks. So, you know, do you really want to bring him in that scenario? But I think at some point you've just got to – the other thing is Carson Wentz just needs a mental break. Like he's broken right now. And I mentioned this to Ben Friday. Like you can't – yes, he's broken. I don't think he's broken up, you know, beyond repair, but he needs time to think and he needs time to figure things out. So you're just in kind of no man's land with this quarterback situation. But overall, I thought Hurts was okay. You know, goes 5 of 12 for 109 yards, the touchdown and the pick. You could see that he's not fully ready yet, nor should he be. It's really tough for a rookie quarterback. No preseason, no OTA, no rookie mini camp. And, you know, we talked about it with Jordan Love and expectations for him. The same goes for Jalen Hurts. But I think just the difference here is that Hurts at least has a skill that he can work with being able to beat you with his legs as well. And, you know, 5 carries, 29 yards to add on to 109 yards passing. And frankly, the offense was just able to move the ball a little bit better when he was in there. Was it great quarterback play? Far, far from it. But I just think Carson Wentz needs a mental break. And at this point, I think you just got to see what you got with Jalen Hurts.
I agree. You might as well stick with him now. I don't think the Eagles are going to win the NFC East. And even if they somehow do, they're not going to make it very far in the playoffs, I don't think. So I agree. Stick it out with Jalen Hurts for the remainder of the season. See what you got from him. But to me, Andy, it seems like, you know, I know nothing about the Eagles in comparison to what I know about the Packers. But from what I saw today, it looked like they threw Hurts in there. And then they were waving the white flag in the third quarter down 17 points. They're running the ball on like 3rd and 17, where 15 yards, not even a first down, would get you into field goal territory. And, you know, obviously that got them nowhere and it led to a punt down 17 points. I don't know how long. I mean, Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl, so it's hard to just say, you know, get out of town a few years after you do that. But it might be time for a little bit of a rebuild in Philadelphia. But then again, I guess it's not my call to make.
My guess is Doug Peterson gets a second or another season, not a second season, but another season.
I think so too.
But if that is the case, which I don't think is a guarantee, if that is the case, I guarantee you, you're going to see a lot of changes along the offensive coaching staff, including a new quarterbacks coach, potentially a new offensive coordinator. He's going to have to gut a good chunk of his staff if he sticks around, and they're going to rebuild it with maybe the same figurehead. But I would not be shocked in any way, shape or form if they did decide to go in a different direction, because at some point, if you are an offensive coach and an offensive mind and a quarterback's guru and things like that, and you can't figure it out in offense, and you know, Carson Wentz, your, you know, former You know, quarterback was almost an MVP before he got hurt. Like he's completely broken right now and you can't figure out anything to fix him. I was talking to Ben about this as well. It's, or maybe it was Tony Pauline. I forget which one it was. One of the two last week. We've reached the point where it's a hell of a lot easier to replace the coach and hope that he can fix the quarterback than it is to replace the quarterback and hope that he can fix the offense.
Very true.
It is not an easy situation. And to an extent, we saw this nowhere near what happened with Carson Wentz, but we saw it happen with Aaron Rodgers a little bit. We saw him digress. He didn't have the offensive line and the weapons around him. His eyes started dropping. He got a little bit uncomfortable. His mechanics started to go awry. And Green Bay needed to go in a different direction and figure something else out that they make no mistake about it. When Mark Murphy made the introductory press conference with Matt LaFleur, he basically said this hire was made in an effort to make sure that they were getting the most out of Aaron Rodgers for the rest of his career in Green Bay. Like they knew that they needed something different, a unique offense, a different spark, something to get Rodgers back on track. And that worked out magnificently. And I just think that, you know, it might be time for Philadelphia to think of something similar.
I think you're spot on, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with them. They're always a very intriguing team, no matter how bad or how good they are. But nonetheless, you use the term going in a different direction. So should we start with Jalen Reagor or should we start with Mason Crosby's extra point miss?
Yeah, and I think, as I mentioned at the onset, the special teams was really the disappointing aspect
here. Oh, man,
here.
It was. Yeah.
And again, you are willing to give some accident forgiveness if this is the first time that this has happened. But what, over the course of the last month, two punt returns for touchdown, a blocked punt, two missed extra points.
Yep.
There was another holding penalty today. J.K. Scott has had really poor punting. The fumble by Darius Shepherd. Like, this went from a very nondescript but mostly average special teams to a completely abysmal special teams over the course of the last month and a half. And if you have Super Bowl aspirations, you can't have one of your units that's just an albatross and is just costing you yardage and points and things like that. And right now, over the course of the last month, that's where the special teams has been. So I know there's been some injuries. I know they've had to kind of move some pieces around, but the special teams really needs to get stuff together. And outside of Mason Crosby being perfect on field goals so far this season, that's about the last thing that they can really hold on to right now, because nothing else is working from a special team standpoint.
Bring me into your head. What are you going to ask Sean Mananga on Thursday?
I just think that he has to have a significant plan in each facet of what's going to go differently for the remainder of the season. That's going to get this team back on track. I don't feel like there is an overall dearth of talent on special teams. We've certainly seen J.K. Scott punt much better than this. Maybe not
correct.
Maybe not much, much better, but like he's shown flashes of being a consistent punter over the course of his career. He's never really finished out a season with it, but he's certainly been better than this. We've certainly seen the special teams play without giving up punt returns for touchdowns two times within a month. We haven't seen blocked punts from this, you know, team very often. Like, here's the thing. We're not asking for great. We're not even asking for really good. We're just asking to make sure that the offense and defense are the ones that are the ones that are really, you know, making sure that they're the ones figuring out the outcome of the game, not the special teams. So it's you just have to be like the 16th or 17th best special teams. If that's the, you know, the bare minimum that's being asked of you, you better well have a plan, especially when like a quarter of the teams are already checked out of the season. So go out, figure it out. You've got the players. Now it's time to put some X's and O's out there and figure out what you're going to do to make the special teams an acceptable unit, because right now it's not.
100% well said. I mean, you ran over the last month, and that's just, it's frustrating to see, you know, the issues that have come out of here within the last month, when I didn't feel like there was a ton early. But J.K. Scott not made to tackle is what we've learned in the last month.
Yeah, if he's your last line of defense, you're in trouble.
It's going to the end zone if he's your last line of defense. But nonetheless, Packers, again, whenever we talk pessimism, I'm going to make it optimistic. The Packers still won by two touchdowns. A win's a win. Let's move on. Pick your MVP. I know there's a couple of good options from this game, and we can each pick one and then roll over some honorable mentions if you want to do it that way.
Yeah, you bet. I mean, in a game where he gets his 400th touchdown pass and was almost flawless throughout the course of the day, I know you can make a strong argument for Devontae Adams in this game as well, but I'm going Aaron Rodgers. It's low-hanging fruit, but I'm taking it this week, and I'm going Rodgers with MVP of this game.
See, so we'll do offensive and defensive then, because I'll go the easy route as well. I'll go with the low-hanging fruit of Devontae Adams. He had a terrific week, as we've mentioned several times throughout this episode of the Pack-A-Day podcast. Let's roll over to the defense. Give me your defensive player of the game for Green Bay.
Yeah, I'm going to go co-defensive players, and it's going to be the two that I talked about earlier. I'm going Kingsley Keke and Rashawn Gary. It's nice. Funny because we feel like this defense needed a little bit of a jolt, and you know, myself and a lot of people kept saying, you know, Zadarius and Preston and Kenny have got to be the ones that step up and get this pressure. And I think all the three of those guys had moments in this game as well, but I thought it was the two second-year guys, Rashawn Gary and Kingsley Keke, that really brought you know, consistent energy, effort, intensity, and I was excited what I saw. Again, everything's in asterisk right now. We're just a few hours removed from the game as we're recording this right now. So I want to watch it in closer detail. And mm-hmm. going back to Preston Smith a week ago, everyone was, you know, all head and heels over how Preston Smith was back and he played great. But when you go back and watch the tape afterwards, and I had a chance to do that during the week, you see that, yes, it was one nice sack. The fumble recovery for a touchdown was basically kind of right place, right time. And then through the rest of the game, he really struggled with getting much pressure, and he didn't actually have that great of an overall game, even though he had a couple big impact plays. Mm-hmm. So I want to see how those guys did on a down-by-down basis when I go through it throughout the week. But as of right now, I'm going to give it to those two guys.
I like that answer. You know, obviously, Rashawn Gary with a sack and a half, as did Zadarius Smith with a sack and a half. Darnell Savage had the crazy athletic interception at the end of the game, which is his third pick in 2 weeks. Also had two tackles on the day. I missed that play earlier, bringing it up when we were talking about the defense. Holy crap, was that awesome.
The interception by Savage?
Darnell, yeah.
Yeah, it really was. It was a great interception. And again, you can see that he's just playing more instinctual football, and the game has really slowed down to, you know, for him to some extent. So I think you start right there. He did have a couple, you know, missteps in this game. He gave up a couple completions. Right. He tried to do a speed turn again and just fell flat because, you know, a little bit because of the slippery surface. So it wasn't a perfect game by Savage by any means, but you just love seeing him play with a little bit more intensity and just reacting a little bit quicker.
Yeah, it seems the defensive backfield has really stepped it up as of late. We've been hearing a lot of Adrian Amos, who had four tackles again in that one, as well as Raven Green, who's kind of obviously plays all over the place, but he got pass an offensive lineman earlier in the game. He slipped and then got back up and still got credited for half a sack on Carson Wentz. That was a really fun play to watch, 24 break through the line. But nonetheless, you know, when the defense actually has plays where they're fun to watch, they're not as frustrating as they have been at some points this year. But good win for the Packers nonetheless. Play of the game, Andy. What was the play of the game to you? Because I think there's a couple of good options here as well.
Yeah, a lot of good options. I got to go with the Aaron Jones touchdown run, though. It was just, you know, kind of a great way to kind of seal the victory. And it was everything about it. Jones ran hard on the play. The offensive line really set him up for success to begin with. And then MVS made like three ridiculous blocks on the play. David Bakhtiari's like 100 yards downfield. And I think Bakhtiari tied Aaron Jones at getting to the end zone at the exact same time, which is crazy. I think they clocked him at over 16 miles per hour on the play, which for a left tackle is crazy. And then, you know, even other players that you saw going down the field, Devontae Adams was down there looking for blocks. Elgton Jenkins was down there looking for blocks. Like that's what it's all about. And in a big situation when the game is still on the line, seeing a play like that, I think that was kind of the one that brought everything together in this game.
For sure. And yeah, you mentioned Bakhtiari getting all the way down there. It was awesome to see the big man just sprint. That's 69 hustle, baby. I will go with the other really fun play, which was on the drive Aaron Rodgers threw his 400th career touchdown pass. And that was that long 42 yards. Does that sound right, Andy, to Devontae Adams?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. When they were at their own 1 yard line and 9 yards deep in the end zone, I think is how you described it earlier. Aaron Rodgers airing it out in pressure and finding Devontae Adams. And that was really a play where you sat back, relaxed, and go, holy smokes, are we spoiled with this fantastic duo? They're just ridiculous to watch sometimes. And that was one of those plays, and it led to Aaron Rodgers' 400th career touchdown pass. So that'll be my play of the game. So quick injury notes, Jay Sternberger, Tyler Urban with an ankle, Billy Winn with a triceps, if I'm not mistaken, Raven Green and EQ St. Brown all left this game and all did not return. I know it's already Sunday night. We probably don't have any updates. I was doing a show while Matt LaFleur talked to the media, but you were part of that media. What do you have?
Yeah, no injury updates that I heard of from anyone. So we'll see. I know a couple of them were concussions, including Jason EQ. You know, you hate to see Tyler Irvin go down with another injury. You hate hearing triceps injury for Billy Winn.
For a big guy, not right? Sure
was for Raven Green, but the fact that none of them returned is obviously not a great sign. We'll see what their availability is this week, but you just hate seeing five guys go down in any game, and hopefully they're able to get some of those guys back next week, and none of them are hopefully long term.
Yes,
and I thought it was interesting too. Josh Jackson was an inactive for this game, and he had no injury designation on Friday. You know, he was on the injury report, but practiced in full and didn't have any designation, which means he wasn't questionable or anything like that. So really interesting. You don't know if he had something that flared up with his previous concussion or if he was a healthy scratch. But either way, that's somewhat intriguing and not necessarily a positive way.
Yeah, definitely interesting on that note. But I was going to say, it sucks to see anybody go down ever, but Swerve, who came back Sunday, is already leaving a game early, his first game back. So hopefully he'll be able to get back too. And it was good to see him out on the field this week after a couple weeks injured. So NFC playoff picture, Andy, has gotten pretty interesting. The Saints beat Atlanta 21-16. On Sunday, and Seattle, who had the same record as Green Bay, lost to leave Green Bay alone in second place in the NFC. Now, Seattle didn't only lose, Andy, they lost to the New York Giants.
Yeah, and I think the Giants have been playing better football, but I think that just goes to show you why, like, you can't take these games for granted. You know, like, yes, they beat the Bears, and yes, they beat the Eagles, and yes, they beat the Jaguars, but, like, the Vikings almost lost to the Jaguars, you know, today. The Seahawks lose to the Giants, and these are NFL teams that still play with a lot of pride, and you know, the Eagles were a team that with a win are still within the NFC East playoff picture, and Doug Peterson's job might be on the line, and Carson Wentz's job might be on the line. Like, these are teams that are trying ridiculously hard to still beat the snot out of you. And if you heard some of the rumblings this week out of Philadelphia of, like, the team meetings that they were having, and, you know, how, you know, Carson Wentz took responsibility in team meetings and says he has to play better. Like, you can tell how much that this really meant to the Eagles, and that they really wanted to bounce back. And, like, some of that stuff was like, oh God, they're really going to come out on fire. And I'm sure they did come out very passionate. The Packers just had answers for all of it. So, you know, it's always surprising to see some of those losses, but it also goes to show why you can't take some of these wins for granted.
100%. And just to go back to the Giants over the Seahawks quickly, I don't know if it's 2014, but the Seattle Seahawks didn't lose to Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, Andy. They lost to Colt McCoy and Alfred Morris, who's apparently still in the league.
Yeah, it was a surprising result. The Giants defense is playing out of their damn minds right now.
Yeah.
That's a really good group. And, you know, I think that group in and of itself might get them in the NFC playoffs, which is crazy. Joe Judge has done a really nice job there as well. But it was surprising. No matter what way you spin it, it was a very shocking loss for the Seattle Seahawks that they lost to Colt McCoy and that Giants offense.
No, 100%. And Blake Martinez, the leading tackler for that New York Giants defense.
There you go.
There you go. A little Packer tie to tie it up. So the Packers, again, alone in second place in the NFC, only a game back of the Saints, who, of course, they beat earlier this year. So as long as they can keep pace and eventually get to the same record as them, they will have the number one seed in the NFC. So, Andy, I mean, four games left. Are you feeling pretty good about where they're at? Obviously, this year, different than past years, as only the number one seed in each conference gets a bye rather than the top two in past years. But how are you feeling about the Packers' chances now, only a game back of the Saints?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I really like that, you know, the Packers are in the number two spot right now. I think if you look at the Saints' remaining schedule, you know, the Saints go to Philadelphia next week, which just based off of what we saw at Philadelphia, I think, you know, New Orleans should probably get that relatively easy. But, you know, road games are always a little bit unique, and maybe they start Jalen Hurts, and maybe that gives the Eagles offense a little bit of a boost. You know, and they still have Taysom Hill at quarterback, at least for now. We'll see what happens with Drew Brees. But, you know, that's an interesting game. Then you've got the Saints versus the Chiefs and the Saints versus the Vikings. And, you know, one of the other pieces of the playoff picture with the Cardinals losing and the Vikings somehow winning in overtime against the Jaguars, you know, which was crazy that it took them to overtime, I guess I should say. The Vikings are now in the final playoff spot. So the Vikings are really going to need that win to kind of keep things there, to keep, you know, keep pace with probably the Cardinals and potentially even the 49ers as well. So, you know, that's a game that the Vikings are going to really care about on Christmas Day. So that Saints Vikings game is interesting. It could make strange bedfellows where the Packers are cheering for the Vikings in that game, which is never fun. And then the Saints have the Panthers on the road too, to end the season. So two road games and then two games against potential playoff teams with the Chiefs and Vikings. If the Packers can win out, if the Packers win out, which is, you know, of course not a guarantee, but if they can, and they'll be favored in all four games, they just need one loss in those four games from the Saints. And the Packers would be the number one seed and get that bye, which would be huge for a variety of different reasons. One, you know, obviously don't have to play somebody, but two, you know, with having a very early bye week early in the season, having an extra bye just to kind of get players healthy and rested and things like that could be a huge advantage. I know people are already going to have nightmares about how the Packers have played off after byes. But most of those losses on the byes have been on the road, haven't necessarily been so much at home. So, and they played well, in some of those situations in the past. So I think it's still obviously advantageous for the Packers to get that win, get the bye, and hopefully get that number one seed overall.
100%. I don't think there's any stupid analytical debate we could have that would say the Packers don't want that bye or shouldn't get that bye or whatever. I think everybody should be in agreement with that. And if you're not, I'd be very intrigued to hear why, because look at the last time they had a bye in the playoffs, Andy, that would be, only last year. And they beat the Seahawks in the divisional round last year off of a bye. Yep. So, you know, they've had the regular season woes for sure the last couple of years, but nonetheless, they were good off the bye last year. I think they can do it again if it results in a playoff game in January at Lambeau Field. Let's quickly look ahead to next weekend as the Packers travel to Detroit. They were in a crazy game today. I guess I don't even know how to start that. They beat the Bears at the very last minute. Again, is it 2014? Because Adrian Peterson scored the game-winning touchdown over the Bears. Both teams now 5-7. So the Lions actually still technically in contention at 5-7. And they're looking to definitely hurt Green Bay any way they can. So what are you looking ahead to next week, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit more interesting game with no Matt Patricia. I'm a little bit, you know, ticked off that, you know, one, the Packers didn't get to go against Bill O'Brien in Houston. They fired him before the Packers could go. And now they fire Matt Patricia before the Packers can face him again. So, you know, those games each probably got exponentially harder by the teams firing their coaches ahead of them. But, you know, in all seriousness, I think this is a game that Green Bay won at home by 21 points. I think early in the game was certainly much closer than that. I think Detroit was up like 14-3, weren't they? 14-3. Yeah, they were up 14-3 in the first quarter in that game. Yep. So, you know, we saw Detroit come back against Chicago. Chicago's not exactly playing great football right now, but this is a team, again, that if you're not careful, can play you tough. So be a 325 game in Detroit, and I think Green Bay will take care of business, but I think it'll be a fun one that the entire team will be breaking down all week long.
Yeah, it's a divisional matchup. It's on the road, and we've seen some crazy games at Detroit when Green Bay goes to visit Ford Field. So I imagine it'll be no different in December, in a year where, you know, the Lions just coming off of a crazy win over Chicago. The Packers have been rolling. They're looking to keep pace with the Saints, as mentioned. So I imagine Sunday's afternoon game will be fun against the familiar Lions. All right, Andy, final takeaways from Sunday's win for Green Bay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I don't have too much different than kind of what we discussed already. I like the overall performance from the defense and the offense. A few blips on the radar with the three and outs, with the long touchdown pass from Hurts to Greg Ward and some things like that. But overall, like the performance, special teams has got to improve. And I think if they can do that, I like that the pressure is starting to come up at the right time of the season. And hopefully that can continue the rest of the way here. So nothing too extraordinary other than what we've discussed so far. How about you?
Yeah, I'm with you for the most part, but just again, I'd like to double down on the fact that I can see some fires getting lit under some butts, and this team is implementing almost, if you will, a sense of urgency that's really good to see. They've now won two straight. They've scored over 30 points in each of their last three games, and they're feeling good. And I think this team, you know, although it has its issues, every team in the NFC has its issues, and we saw some of those issues ironed out against Philadelphia on Sunday. Some things from the defense that were really encouraging moving forward, and we hope that throughout the month of December and of course that early January game against Chicago, that this team just continues to look more sharp and ready for a deep playoff run, because they were so close last year. But I know you and I'd be pretty darn happy if they were, you know, playing 2 weeks later than they were last year. So that'll do it for the Monday edition of the Pack-A-Day podcast on the Blue Wire Network. That's Andy Herman. You can find him on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. I'm Alex Strofe. We'll see you in a few weeks.